Again, I just want to say good evening to everybody who's with us as we are moving forward in our CMI leadership coaching. Tonight we want to kind of talk about, as we start, is this three-level leadership model. It's a real simple model. We're going to talk about the three levels, and then we're going to kind of break down each level and, you know, just give you really a summary or just kind of on the surface idea of how each works. So if you have the worksheet, you'll notice on the worksheet, it's a simple circle, almost bullseye-like. If you don't have it, picture a dartboard. On the dartboard, the outer edge is what we call public. There's an inner circle we call private. And then there is the bullseye space that we call personal. Those are the three levels we want to talk about tonight. We want to talk about your leadership style in public, your leadership style in private, and then your leadership style that's personal. One of the things we know is that, unfortunately, while most people claim to be the same all the time, it's almost humanly impossible, particularly as a leader. You know, one of the things that we talk about biblically and in church is that this guy Paul, who was serving God and preaching, he actually claims to have been all things to all people so that he might reach just one. And I think that's a really good leadership model, understanding that you really can't always be just you and get along with everyone. You know, one of the things we kind of pride ourselves on is not changing. You know, we often consider ourselves to be authentic if we're the same, you know, at home, on our job, in public, in private. But I really want to, you know, maybe challenge that tonight and suggest that to be a good leader, you know, understanding your style and understanding someone else's style, you don't have to compromise on who you are. You don't necessarily have to belittle or degrade who you are. But sometimes, you know, it's beneficial if you're willing to become what a person needs so that they can get their job done and so that they can really relate to you. And, you know, many of us are just kind of, you know, have the stubborn idea that this is who I am and you're going to deal with it. If you don't like it, you leave. You know, that may work. You know, I got to be honest. That may actually work in some places. It may be working for you now. So we're not saying it's wrong. But I would just kind of seek, you know, to kind of push leaders like yourself, you know, already gifted, already talented, already in the position, you know, already caring for your family, already managing, you know, a lot of life, ups and downs, to really consider who you are in public being different from who you are personally and in private. The public and the private leadership, you know, those are the outer behavior ideas. They're only distinguished because oftentimes people's perspective of you is not really your perspective of you. So, you know, in public, you want to make sure that you can become who people need you to be but still know who you are. That's kind of how that works. You know, in public, depending on, I'll talk about me, but depending on where I am, you know, I may change. And so I had the privilege of going to JMU, greatest college in the whole universe. While, of course, I'm there, it's predominantly white, which is not, you know, a problem. But often the words and the slang were different from how I grew up in Phoebus, which is a rougher area of Hampton. So it's not downtown Hampton, but it's definitely not suburb. And so the conversation may have the same meaning, but the actual words used may change. Well, I also do a mentorship, let's say, in Richmond at John Marshall with a group of young boys. The conversation I had when I was at JMU wouldn't even be received with the young guys that are playing basketball. Many are still, you know, doing street gang, and I'm trying to convert. But the conversation just isn't the same. So if you were to hear both conversations, you may assume that I was either schizophrenic or you would think I was being hypocritical. You know, some may say you aren't even being true to yourself. You know, sometimes, you know, I will be suited up when I go to John Marshall. Other times, I'd be dressed down, baggy jeans, Tim's, a polo with a vest. You know, and what happens in those scenarios is I'm really trying to be conscious of what the people need that I'm going to serve, what the people need that I'm actually, you know, going to encounter. You know, for me, again, not to impress upon anybody my religion this time, but, you know, as a pastor, one of the stereotypes that was given, you know, was to always be suited. It's a professional occupation, and so you should, you know, wear business attire, which I do, which I like, which I love. However, the people that I was really trying to reach that were not in our church didn't necessarily subscribe to the idea of dressing up, and they used dressing up as a reason to not come to church. And so it has been my practice to not necessarily, you know, wear the three-piece suit or business attire every Sunday or every Wednesday when I'm going to encounter people or when we do street evangelism. Again, you know, some could say, well, you know, that's not being you. That's not authentic. You should be you, and people should adapt to it. And, you know, they may have some truth to it. However, I'm really, really kind of pushing everybody, when we talk about your public, is to consider that if you're going to go in public, if you're going to have to interact with public, you want to do it in such a way, or at least consider doing it in such a way where the people can receive who you are because you are where they are. You know, again, you know, not to be too preachy, but one of the greatest simple statements I think that they talk about Jesus is that he grew in favor with God and with man. That at some point, you know, outside of all the ridicule he received, people could receive him because even though he was this heavenly being that lived in celestial places and had royal items at his disposal, he spoke in layman's terms. He dealt with farming and harvesting when necessary because he understood that as a leader, you really want to be appealing to the people that you serve. It's like a chef cooking a meal, you know. Chefs cook meals all the time, and of course, you know, they could just cook and eat it right out of the pot because it tastes good to them. They know what's in it. They prepared it. It's going to be delicious because it tastes good. But, you know, they don't serve you right out of the pot. They don't bring the meal, you know, fresh out of the pan. What they do is they decorate it a little. They put a few garnishes on it. They add, you know, a slice of orange or a slice of lemon, put some garland on the plate. When you get a dessert, you know, high-dollar dessert, they'll sprinkle a little chocolate on the side and, you know, a little of the sugar sauce around what the actual dessert is. Now, again, they could have not done that and just given it to you because it's how they like it. But what they understand is that oftentimes presentation allows people to get better and receive better what you're serving. I once had an older gentleman tell me that sometimes in order for people to get what they need, you have to give them what they want. You know, it was a time in my life early where I was really dealing with how to please people but still be myself. And he said, listen, sometimes you got to give them what they want in order for them to get what they need. And I think as a leader, you have to think about your team or the people you lead or your coworkers, your family even sometimes. You know, what is it that they need? And then my question for all of us is, can you be the leader and the person that's bigger and stronger where you can become what they need and still hold on to the integrity of who you are? So, when, you know, we talk about this leadership model, we talk about just kind of making sure you have a public style. You know who you are in public. Then there is the private. The private is this is really who I think I am. You know, if you had to write down your characteristics, your personality, if you were loud or quiet, if you were extrovert or introvert, you know, we've been going over the DISC model. You've probably been thinking to yourself, I think I am this. Chances are that people don't always agree that you are who you think you are. That, you know, a lot of times, you know, the image you present is not really the image that people receive. And that's not a bad thing. It's just really understanding, you know, that who you are privately may not be who you are publicly. And, you know, tonight I'm suggesting that's okay. They don't really have to be the same person. And it doesn't make you schizophrenic or hypocritical. It is just the makeup of people. I mean, literally, it's the makeup of people. When you look at a person's skin, you can't tell what's going on inside. I've known people who look beautiful on the outside because they intentionally adorn themselves, you know, dress up, look good. But internally, they have, you know, medical issues where, you know, lung defect or a heart pacer or, you know, they're dealing with ulcers in their stomachs. And sometimes for us, we really do the same. You know, our public or outer and our private inner person really don't match. And what we're saying tonight, you know, we're not saying how to fix it. We're not telling you what to do. What we are saying is at least, you know, take some time to identify the difference between your public and your private lifestyle, because they really become your public and private leadership style. The third is your personal leadership. Now, the difference between private leadership and personal leadership is private leadership still includes some people. You know, it's the inner circle. Maybe the others that are your peers in management, or maybe the other pastors that you associate with, maybe, you know, the patriarchs or matriarchs of your family. And so, you know, it's not strangers. You know, the private life still includes some people. The personal life is bigger than the private, because what it asks you to do is have a true self-awareness of yourself. So if you can follow this, the public is what I'm presenting that people need. The private is almost me presenting who I think I am, because it's who I want to be. The personal is saying, you know what, this is who I really am. These are the areas I'm strong. These are the areas I'm weak. These are areas that I'm sensitive. These are areas that I really just don't care. These are some skills that I'm good at, and while I don't want to toot my own horn or brag about myself, if given this task assignment at any time without preparation, I can handle it. But then, you know, there's some things that if you gave me 4 hours, 4 weeks, 4 months, 4 years to do, I still might not complete it correctly. And so there has to be some part of you that pauses and gives your own self-examination and a serious evaluation so that, again, when you present your private and your public person, you're doing it from a correct lens. So, you know, when we talk about these three models, what we really ask you to do from there is, you know, break them down. Start trying to figure out how to handle those, how to maneuver with those. Because when you identify your public life, your private leadership, and your personal leadership, then what we've come to is this resolve that I cannot do everything on my own. So here's what happens for us. You know, we work hard, we get accolades, we do well, and as a result, some person, some group of people say, you are a leader. They vote you in, they give you the job, they shoot you the promotion, they give you Valentine's as a family member, and so now you hold this leadership position. The challenge, though, is that we gained that leadership position because of what we were doing, you know, because we completed the task, because we were efficient, because we did it maybe better than someone else, because we worked hard at it. The problem for us, while that's good, let's be honest, I want to applaud you. If I could do that, I'll take a minute and say, you are good at what you do. I'm telling you, I know you're good at it. Now that you are a leader, something has to shift. See, if as a leader you continue to keep doing and doing and doing and doing, what it does is it undercuts your team, gives them no responsibility. It never allows them to become the leader that you are or the leader that they can be because you're doing it all. There has to be, or, you know, I'm submitting that it would be beneficial that at some point in your leadership style, in your leadership duration, in your leadership vocation, that you shift from doing everything to allowing others to do what you could do just to see their leadership potential grow. I'm not sure if we talked about it. I definitely did send a blog out about it. You know, but there's this idea of dying empty. The idea of dying empty is simply at some point everything in you, you ought to pour out. So that if by chance you happen to die sometime soon, and I'm praying you don't, but when you do, that everything you learn, somebody else learn. Every vision you had, somebody else can pick up and go forward with. Everything you've experienced, somebody else knows about so they can learn from it. Now, if you are a leader that's still doing, working hard, accomplishing everything, doing all of the work, not sharing responsibility, then one, it doesn't give other people a chance to grow, doesn't allow other people to use their skills. Not to mention, it's going to wear you out. I know for a long time I would bump into leaders doing workshops, and they would talk about how tired they were, how worn out they were, you know, almost as if it was a badge of honor. Because I'm the leader, I work hard and I'm tired. That should not be your boast. If there's anything you should boast about the effectiveness of your team, how everyone on your team works hard and works diligently, completes their task. And that happens when we properly learn how to delegate. See, that's why it's important to know who you are in public and, you know what you do in private and have personal evaluation. Because if you aren't secure in who you are, then you're less likely to delegate. Because if you don't know who you are, then delegation becomes, you know, a risk to your job. It almost lessens what is your mental job security. You'll think that if I give them something to do and they do it well while I'm not doing anything, then it's going to cause them to somehow be elevated above me. That's not what we're pushing. And when we talk about maximizing your potential, the greatest way to maximize your potential is to maximize someone else's. So in order to do that, you know, what we're saying is be willing to know who you are, be confident in who you are, the good, the bad, and different, and then start assigning tasks to others so that they, too, can start to grow. The more leaders you have around you really defines your leadership. It's not the number of followers. It's not the number of people or peons that just take orders from you and do what you say. It's really the number of people who could lead as well as you but still are willing to follow you. That, I think, is real leadership. There are three things you want to kind of look at when we talk about delegation. Whenever you talk about delegation, you want to have what we call the three pillars of team culture. One of those pillars is curiosity. Another pillar is passion. And then that third one is empathy. They're on your worksheet, but in case you haven't received the worksheet yet, via email, I'll say them again, that the pillars are curiosity, their passion, and empathy. Curiosity should be had by both you and those you're delegating. See, what curiosity does is it causes people to ask questions. See, people who work for you or that you serve who are curious, they'll never just take whatever you say and do it. They'll always ask questions. And, you know, you're a leader, so you already know. The more questions a person asks, the more answers they get. That works the other way around. If you never ask a question, you won't get any answers. And so curious people will ask so many questions or they'll seek advice from others. They're curious to the point where they'll seek to see who around them has certain skill sets so that they'll tap into those who are around them. And as a leader, one, let me say, you ought to be curious. You know, you ought to ask questions often. You ought to find out about the home life of those you work with or those you serve or those you're in a relationship with. That doesn't mean you have to be best friends. But what curiosity does is it starts to give you insight on people's ability, people's time frame, people's passions, people's skill set beyond what they put on their resume. So, one, you want to be curious because it'll help you determine what you delegate and who you delegate it to. But you also want to find people who are curious. You ought to look for the people who are asking the questions, who, after giving an assignment, will come back and bring you more information about it than you gave them. Because the curiosity creates what is a very creative, it creates a creative, sorry about that double vocative. But what it does is it creates or it designs for us something that we haven't seen or we haven't had. That's leadership. Remember, we define leadership in the CMI leadership coaching as your ability to take a person or group of people to a place they've never been before. And if you're supposed to take a person to a place they've never been before, it's going to take some creativity. Because creativity, you know, in its minimal form, is taking something that exists and changing it so that you can't recognize it. So only, you know, this idea of curious people, curious leaders, and curious team members, you understand the curiosity, it really helps to promote creativity, thus causing leadership to be effective. One, you want to have curiosity, but you also want to have passion. One, you ought to have passion, and they ought to have passion. Passion is what fuels the enthusiasm and the effort. Passion causes a person to work overtime without asking for pay. Passion will cause you to come in early because you want to do the job, not necessarily because you have to do the job. So, one, you know, you want to find your passion. You know, we talked about a little bit last week when we talked, had the conversation with Zig Ziglar. You know, if you're not passionate about it, it'll show. If you don't want to do it, it'll come out. I've noticed that people who are passionate will do it when they're tired. You know, when you're passionate about it, you can't go to sleep because you're thinking about it all night long. So can you imagine you delegating an assignment or a task to a family member or to a coworker, or you being passionate when you talk to clients to the point that when they grab hold to it, you don't even have to mention it, but they're just constantly 24/7, 365 thinking about it because it's what they naturally do? See, here's the misconception. the misconception for many of us is that because people have the job that they're passionate about it. That would be good, but let's be honest. Everybody's not passionate about their job. Matter of fact, some people are on this call now hoping that at the end of it, they'll become a leader in another job or they can start their own business because where you are is not where you're happy. And so because that's the case, you know, it's our job as leaders to figure out if a person is on a job or serving in a church or working in a particular organization, you know, discover what they're passionate about and see if in some way you can merge what they're passionate about to the task, job, or assignment that they have. I'm telling you, if you can get their passion, then you'll have to fuss less. You won't have to check up on them. You won't have to review their work as often because their passion will cause them to be overly productive. So, one, you've got to find your passion. But then, two, you want to start delegating to people according to what their passions are. I know I made that mistake many times. You know, hopefully you can learn from my mistakes. And that is I've given people tasks and assignments because I saw their skill set and there was a vacancy in that particular position, only to find out later that they weren't good at that. You know, I've had people who I saw, you know, they were successful at one thing. They did great, overachievers. So, you know, when I find a vacancy, I move them to this new area hoping that they have that same drive. They didn't do as well in the second job or the third job or the fourth assignment because while they're skilled and while they're good people, while, you know, they're passionate about something, they weren't necessarily passionate about this new assignment. One, it caused the assignment not to be done at its best, but then two, it actually devalues the person. You put them in a place where they aren't effective. You know, maybe it's a simple example, but it's like a light bulb. You can take a light bulb and turn it on and it right beside the sun, and it can shine bright, but it doesn't matter because it's behind the sun. You take that same light bulb and put them in the dark, that light comes on, you now find that light bulb working at its maximum potential. Sometimes we put, you know, very, very bright light bulbs right near suns, and it seems like their passion fizzles. But if you put them in dark places, you'll see their passion to light up a room or to change an atmosphere, to complete a task, it'll blossom. So you want to, you know, make sure you look for passion. So one, you know, find curious people. Two, you want to identify people's passion. But then three, you want to discover their empathy level. Empathy is a person's ability to see somebody else's perspective. You know, people use the word sympathy and empathy, you know, almost interchangeably. But what empathy says is, I'm putting myself in your place and I care what you think. So that's a key in delegation. Because what you want to, you know, kind of walk away from is delegating to people who don't care about other people or the person delegating the job. That was a lot of words. Let me see if I can break it down. I don't want to give you a job and you not try to figure out how I would be thinking about what I just gave you. Now, as a leader, I don't want to hand you a task and then you go rogue and just do what you want with it. The empathy level of a person says, hey, I'm going to use my skill, I'm going to be unique, I'm going to take my talent and my experience, and I'm going to mold and make this assignment task work. But I also care, one, about the person who gave it, because I want to make sure that when I'm finished with it, it still has some of their flavor or some of their personality. But then I also want to care about the people who are going to receive this service or receive this product or receive, you know, whatever it is that you're selling. Because if I don't care or put myself in the place of the person who's buying or selling it, if I don't put myself in the place of the person who's delegating it, no matter how good it looks in the end, it's still not effective because it doesn't actually touch a person. It doesn't touch a person's heart. It doesn't fit what a person had envisioned. And so you want to look for people that, you know, have that empathy level, people who ask, you know, well, what were you thinking or how is this going to help? You know, when you're talking about doing something for kids or making a child product, you know, the question is, well, how do kids think? Because if I can put myself in a child's place, then I can make this product or the service better. You know, if you're in church or ministry, you know, we do a lot of church and ministry to only fit other church members. And while some church ministries are designed to help grow Christians, a lot of what we do, you know, we claim focuses on the non-saved, but we don't put ourselves in the place of a non-believer to figure out exactly how it's going to benefit them. You know, some of you are in management. You are in product sales. You know, we make a lot of products, and you ask, you know, what is the consumer going to do with it, or how can they use it? You create a problem, and then you provide a product that solves it. But then the next question is, I have to put myself in that consumer's place to figure out, is this really something that's going to be practical for them? And I think when you do that, you know, what it does, it creates for us a connection. And that's what empathy is. It's really you connecting with other people emotionally and practically. So, you know, when you delegate, find someone who has, you know, some type of empathetic mind or empathetic heart. But then I would remind you, you know, as a leader, you too. We have to be empathetic. We have to put ourselves in their place. You know, did I give him or her enough information to complete the task? Did I give them enough time to complete the task? Did I give them clear instructions on exactly what we want the task to be? Because, you know, I know for myself, sometimes I give a task and, you know, be a little disappointed when it's not done, only to discover that if I had put myself in their place, that there was no way that they could have completed that job in the time frame that I gave with the information I provided. But the non-empathetic me hadn't considered that. And so even though I knew who I was publicly and privately and I evaluated myself personally, I delegated it without any connection to the people I was working with or the people that will receive the service. So again, you know, when we talk about these pillars, you want to make sure you understand curiosity, you understand passion, and you understand empathy. But there are a few other notes that are on your worksheet. You know, I hope that you kind of get to those. I took a little more time than I wanted to. I want to definitely have our day come on now and prepare to lead us through what is this third part of the DISC model. We've already talked about the D and the I. One of the other parts of this DISC model is the S. And so, Ade, if you are ready, you can unmute. I think that's the star six, and I'm going to unmute you from the dashboard. And if you could join us now, Ade, and kind of feed us a little bit, share with us from the DISC model.
That was really a good teaching on leadership, and actually some of the points that you made I want to kind of refer to. Hope everybody's doing well. One of the things that's important with the S personality style is kind of connecting to other folks. And one of the things you talked about when you talked about empathy, that's the way that we connect with other folks, is utilizing empathy and learning how to, as you mentioned earlier as well, learning how to be all things to all people. So I think that's very important and very appropriate for talking about the S. When looking at this, I was looking at some of the information from Dr. Lance Wilnau, who's an expert on transformational training and leadership. And he recently posed a question, and I can pose this rhetorically to you all. And he asked, who would you rather follow? A leader who says, follow me. I know exactly where I'm going, and I know how to get there. Or B, follow me. I don't know where I'm going, but I am certain I am being led and open to what is emerging. I'm certain that the voice that I'm hearing is actually leading me in the right direction, so follow me. Now, most of the time, any modern business person or even a person in the church who's studying a book in leadership or even looking at the personalities, they're going to want to follow the first person, the person that is seemingly sure of themselves. But the question remains, and I guess we would call it the elephant in the room, what if they're confident about going in the wrong direction? They know where they want to go. They know exactly how to get there. But what if they're leading you astray? They're leading you to a place that you really don't want to go once you get there. The other person, or B person we'll call them, is open to learning. They don't have an ego. They're not invested in being right. And they want to actually discover the best way to move forward. In other words, they will actually solicit your input in terms of what's the best way to go. So when dealing with problems, specifically in personality, whether it's a problem of your city, your nation, and your family, whether it's economic, whether it's racial, whether it's domestic or educational, it's sometimes hard to just focus on someone and be led by someone that feels like they know everything. When in actuality, it's okay sometimes to say you don't know. It's okay to say, I can't handle all this at once, so I need to delegate. It's okay to say, I need to connect to some other people and get some varying viewpoints. And so Actually, there is a person in Scripture, in the Bible, that he is reminding us of in the essay that he gave about following the person that didn't know where they were going. And the person was an entrepreneur. He was a model for leadership. He was a salt trader in his day, which means he was an agriculturalist. He was a statesman. He was a mentor and trainer of 153 men, the founder of a nation, a patriarch of three major religions, and he was a very high S, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, and his name was Abraham. So sometimes, and many of you that have read the Bible might now understand the scripture where I'm coming from. He followed God, and he was going without knowing where he was going, but he felt like he was being led. And so sometimes we got to connect to those that are S's in their leadership styles, or even if we're S's, to be able to follow folks that are steady, they demonstrate pace and consistency, and they connect to something. They're not like I's or D's. They're not very high responsive. They're not extroverted. They're not outgoing. But they do know exactly how to connect to folks, and they are more introverted in terms of desiring to connect to folks from a perspective of what is family, what is friendship, what in what ways can I build with this person? Not just trying to see what I can get out of them, but trying to see how I can actually bond with them and make them more secure, make them more happy. So one of the greatest fears, therefore, of an S is change. They want to make sure that they establish a relationship, establish rapport, and they don't want things to change too much. They want to make sure that everyone is safe and secure and sound. So therefore, their emotional reaction to things, when things change, is fear or anxiety. They worry. They're very anxious. They're very nervous when things begin to change, when things begin to fall apart, so to speak. We talked about the buyer's remorse question, or sort of the question that's asked when an S gets into conflict. And that question is, did I really need to make this change now? They're so focused on what changes need to be made that many times what happens once they make the decision, they're apprehensive about decision, and they forget to be in the now moment and forget to be present to the right situation. And they're worried about what's going to happen because of this change and worried about what happened because I made a change. And so one of the important things that we see about an S is, as we mentioned before, they're very people-oriented, they're loyal, they're very friendly, they're hard workers, but they're not hard workers to create a product or as performers. They're hardworking to win people. They're great team players. As a matter of fact, I've seen in many leadership circles, a lot of people want S's sort of as the glue or the fabric of their team that they want to connect to. But again, as we said, they avoid change. They don't like confrontation. So they do well in terms of working hard, but when it's time to make a decision, they would rather defer that to someone else. They're not very assertive, especially when you look at the D and the I that we've been studying the last couple of weeks. So in terms of juxtaposing them with the D and the I, they're very slow paced. And you know what I mean, slow, not necessarily in a negative sense, but it means that they are, as we said, introverted, or they let the environment take control, or they let the environment take precedence or be paramount. They would rather sit back and look at their environment and see how they can fit in the environment instead of trying to control it. Therefore, they're good listeners. They're very good at sharing, and obviously they are very good in terms of relationships. So if you look at your handout, you have some very good notes about what an S personality is like. And one of the things that it says is that S's are motivated by cooperating and cooperating with others, and they look for opportunities to try to help and share what they know in order to help people. Another thing is that in terms of their demeanor, they're very calm, they're very patient. Along with C's, many people would say that S's are shy. And if you look at them in the wrong light or you don't have a context for who they are, you might say they're stuck up because you really don't get to know them by basically having one conversation or one encounter with them. They do value loyalty. helping others, and security. So let's look at some of the goals for a person with an S style. They value, obviously, personal accomplishments, as we mentioned, and they want to be accepted by the group, which we know can be a good thing or a negative thing as well. They power through formal roles and positions of authority, whereas an I or D would thrive on people perceiving them as the leader, and they would take that role and they would relish that role. An S person doesn't really conform to the norm. And although they don't always speak out, they always want to work hard and make sure that they're noticed in terms of their work, not in terms of how much they've talked out. You've heard even in sports circles or maybe even at church, a person that leads by example. So this is not the guy or the gal in the locker room that is the rah-rah person or gets everybody in the huddle and says, okay, we're going to do this. This is the person that goes out every day. The cliche is they get to the gym first and they're the last to leave the gym. So that's sort of a personality or an S type. And they also like to maintain the status quo of the controlled environment. So it's interesting that they like control just like a D. And if you see that they cross where a D is, but they want the environment to be controlled, but they don't want to control the environment. So that would be the way that we can see a difference between a D and an S. So one of the things they need to do is quickly adapt to change because they don't like change. They have an aversion to change. So they need to focus on what the change is, look at it logically, look at it rationally, even emotionally, because emotions deal with the mind and emotions connect to our ability to make decisions. So they need to do that because otherwise, as we said earlier, they'll get stuck in that change mode and say, did I make this decision properly? What's going to happen? What are the ramifications of my decisions? So they want to take their energy and not worry and be anxious, but take their energy and just go ahead and adapt. They want to also be able to multitask. Now, everyone thinks that we can multitask very well, but S's really need to focus on multitask because they can kind of zero in on one thing and not see the importance of getting to other projects and other tasks. Whereas the D and the I, they would at this point be yelling at the S saying, we got this project to finish, we got this thing to do, the C as well. And we need to get this done, what the S would say, let's just take our time and make sure we do this right. Some of the other personalities would say, no, we need to have four or five things going on at the same time. S's do not promote themselves very well, so that's one of the things that they would need to do. And they also need to learn how to confront others in a nice way, but confront others in an assertive way. Remember, you don't want to be passive or aggressive, but you want to be assertive, and S's have difficulty with that, so that's one of the things that they can learn. And so when connecting and communicating to someone with an S style, whether you have an S and communicating to someone that has a different style or you are following an S, they desire someone that's personal, amiable. They need someone to express interest in them and say clearly what the expectation is. They need time to process because they are introverted. They need time for things to be clarified for them. They want specificity. They want you to be polite, whereas we've mentioned before, the Ds kind of want to control things, so sometimes they can be abrasive and lose their politeness. But S's do tend to avoid being confrontational or rude. So sometimes S's, even though we said that they can connect with Ds well, if it's in the right environment, we'll sometimes avoid them. And the more we add information and connect with these masterminds, you'll see that the blends come together and you'll start seeing not only is there a D, is there an I, is there an S, and there's a C, but there are DSC people or there are IDS people. And then you'll start seeing the blends and it gets even more complex on how they relate and connect to each other. But the purpose tonight is to give a brief introduction of what an S is and show how it fits into leadership. So hopefully you gain some important information on how to connect using the S style. Thank you.
I definitely appreciate that, man. And, you know, for anybody on the call, hopefully you're getting something from it, gaining something from each call. taking notes maybe, and, you know, this is not exclusive information, so share it, you know, with as many people as you can. We do have about 7 minutes, and, you know, we try to maximize the time we have, but at the same time keep it at an hour. We've been kind of trying to create the network even on these Monday night calls, and so I'm wondering if anybody has any aha moment or anything that really resonated with you that you want to share. If you would like to, I'm going to ask if you would just star 6. I think that'll unmute you and allow you to kind of share a little information of what you learned or what kind of jumped out for you. I'm going to ask, we have an 804, suffix is 9965. I think that's Sherelle. I'm going to ask if she would just prepare to maybe kind of give us something that she's learned from it. I wanted to highlight Sherelle. She leads an organization called Iron Dresses. It's a women empowerment group. She has a women's conference coming up in May. I don't have all of the details, but if Sherelle would maybe just kind of share something that you learned from this call or maybe some of the other calls, that would definitely help us out a lot. Meanwhile, I'll look for some of that information so that I can share about what you have coming up. Sherelle, if you're still on, I think you are unmuted now.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Yes. From this call specifically, I think what I really took away was the public, private, and personal leadership nuggets, just who you are, public, and private, and your personal style, they are going to affect your leadership style. And just being able to, it really made me reflect and try to differentiate, am I really who I am in private? Is that who I am personally? And then how does that reflect publicly? And just are there conflicts with my own self and how I lead? So those are excellent points I think I took away from today.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And Sherelle, by the way, is in Harrisonburg, Virginia. She's up that way. And, again, she does have a women's conference coming up in May. You'll hear more about that. I'll definitely highlight that as I get more information. But until then, you can check her out at irondresses.com. Does what I think is really interesting. They do Wear a Dress Wednesday. I think all of the women that support Iron Dresses, they wear dresses every Wednesday, take pictures, and kind of show off their femininity. So, Sherelle, thanks for being with us on the call. Thanks for sharing what you learned tonight.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that just wants to share before we kind of shut down for tonight? Okay. If no one else wants to share, we do hope that you did grab something from it, whether you chose to share it, you know, on a call or not. Again, we encourage you to just kind of share either through Facebook or maybe email some of the things you learned and or some of the questions you have. We're getting ready to kind of end this particular mastermind, and we're going to extend it one more week. So next week we'll meet one more Monday night, and it will conclude our personality styles for those who are just kind of getting on the call. So next Monday will be our last call for this segment. The Monday following that, we'll kick right back in, and we'll do what are the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. It will be a 10 to 12-week mastermind on John Maxwell's training. There's a lot of finance training and personality training that will take place as well during that 10 to 12. And, again, that's a free mastermind on Monday, so we'd love for you to call in, invite friends, invite coworkers, you know, so that everybody can kind of benefit from the leadership information. But then Thursday, not this Thursday, but next Thursday, Thursday, March 6th, I believe, we'll kick off what is our Put Your Dream to the Test Mastermind. It's a little different than this one. There probably won't be as many people. It'll definitely be a lot more dialogue. It's a $20 or $60 fee for that mastermind just because of how it's set up. The $20 just allows you to be on the call, get all of the audios, get worksheets that are emailed. The $60 allows you to actually get the hard copy book, a hard copy workbook, the exclusive videos from John Maxwell with him actually teaching it along with the calls and the training. So, again, you know, if that's something that you want to invest in, we'd love for you to do that. We'll start that call But if not, we'll be here every Monday, you know, at 7 o'clock, making sure that we provide this insight so that each person can maximize their potential. Again, we hope you learned something tonight. Ade, thank you again. We'll have a couple of guests on our final call with us as we get ready to make the transition. As we get off this call, your challenge today is, one, identify which personality behavior are you, the D or the I or the S. We'll talk about the C later. And then really try to figure out, you know, where are you? Who are you? Publicly, privately, and personally. And then start delegating, because your delegation will help grow new leaders, and growing new leaders is the best way to maximize your potential. Everybody have a great night. Expect an email soon.